How big is this helmet?
It's big. It's probably about kind of, you know, 9 inches across.
Oh, that one.
I like it. I put hats on it, you know.
and anyone, this is just as well that podcast can't be started at a random point, because Botwright talking about his 9-inch helmet that he puts helmet with hats on.
out of context, that would sound very strange indeed.
It's time to play the music. It's time to light the lights. It's time to meet the Muppets on the Muppet Show tonight.
Why do we always come here?
I guess we'll never know.
It's like a kind of torture to have to watch the show.
Hello and welcome to the AV Forums podcast for the 30th of April 2014. And joining me for this edition are news editor Mark Hodkinson.
Ride like the wind, bullseye.
Games editor Mark Botwright.
You can't rush art.
Movies editor Simon Crust.
I can't look. Can somebody please cover my eyes?
And audio reviewer Ed Selly.
How do you spell FBI?
Right, well, after our Easter... yes, thank you, Ed. After our Easter break, we're back with all the latest hardware news. And I was lucky enough on Wednesday of last week to be at a Sony 4K event at Pinewood Studios. So I had a bit of a nose around while I was there because I knew they were gearing up to shoot Bond 24 and the new Star Wars film. Fortunately, I didn't see much. I think I saw what might have been a Tatooine set, but wasn't completely convinced. I had a look inside 007 stage, but that was basically empty apart from some green screen. And I saw Sam Mendes's car parking space. So there you go.
Mendes.
I thought it was a plural.
Sam Mendes, yeah. What's the plural of Mendes? It's always car parking space anyway. But the reason that we were there was because Sony were launching, I guess their 4K plan for the year. So they re-announced their TVs, which they've already shown us twice before, once at CES and then again at their press event, I think back in February. So that was not that sort of groundbreaking. But they also started talking about how they're planning to deliver 4K content to people that do buy their 4K displays. And obviously, given that they're the only manufacturer at the moment who's got both 4K TVs and native 4K projectors, we're all sort of waiting. And the big question everyone was asking was, well, what about 4K Blu-ray? Because it's all well and good to say, well, there's going to be downloading and streaming and 4K Netflix. But if you haven't got a particularly big broadband connection like me, 4K Blu-ray is kind of the great white hope. And Sony were really dodging the question. They basically would not say anything other than the BDA have already announced that they will release specifications at some point this year, which didn't sound really hopeful because this is the company that developed Blu-ray. This is the company that owns a film studio, and they still couldn't give us any clear indication of there ever being a 4K Blu-ray format being released. I know the technology is there, four layers, 100 gigabyte HEVC codec, ready to go, apparently, from inside sources that talk to me. But I believe it's the studios that are dragging their heels. So it looks like all the manufacturers, including Sony, are placing an awful lot of faith on Netflix to deliver 4K content at some point this year. Obviously, there might be some broadcasters too that will come in, satellite broadcasters. I know Sky are working on it at the moment. And there will be some footage being filmed in 4K at the World Cup. I think they're shooting three games, including the final. They've got 12 F55 Sony 4K cameras there to cover it. And they've done some other stuff that's only been doing things like concert footage and that sort of stuff. And obviously they've been doing testing at Wimbledon. But really at the moment, the only sort of solid confirmed 4K source is going to be Netflix. At some point, Sony will also be offering downloads from their unlimited service, although they haven't announced that for the UK yet. And their big announcement at the end of the day was their 4K media player, which is for people who own the 2012 or 2013 4K TVs, which didn't have HEVC decoding, and also if you've got one of their projectors. That's going to be about £350. It sounds like a lot of money to pay just to get hold of Netflix 4K, but I guess if you've got no other choice and there's no other 4K content, it might be the only thing you can use. Obviously, their 2014 TVs have HEVC decoding in them already, so you don't need the box for them.
Well, it's hardly the great white hope, is it? But I suppose it's something.
I've got to say, they did do one thing. They did do was a demonstration of a live streaming 4K Netflix Ultra HD 4K. It's interesting that no point did anyone from Sony ever use the words Ultra HD. By the way, it was all 4K. But anyway, they did show some actual genuine live streaming. We watched about 15 minutes of an episode of House of Cards, and I've got to say, it did look really good. I mean, there were minimal compression artifacts. There wasn't too much in the way of banding. I thought it was quite impressive, actually.
About the equivalent of Blu-ray, would you say?
Steve? Yeah, I'd say it was probably sharper than Blu-ray. I mean, you could see that there was a higher resolution than anything I'd seen from certainly from Netflix. I obviously wasn't in a position to do a side-by-side comparison with the Blu-ray, but, you know, it looked very impressive, and I got up pretty close to the TV, too, to really have a good look at it, and yeah, I was quite impressed with that. So, I mean, if you've got the bandwidth, I think, you know, 4K via Netflix is going to look pretty good. But, you know, it's just depressing that that seems to be about the only thing right now that's confirmed and available. And, you know, I'm really beginning to get worried that we're not going to see another disc format. The studios just aren't interested in it, and they just rather download and stream and control it and cut out the middleman and make more money themselves.
I think that's, you know, I know it's clearly not the answer you want to hear, but I suspect that that's on the cards, and I don't think that there's going to be another disc format coming, especially as I know, obviously, you can do all manner of copy protection and all the like, but you are essentially handing out a studio master copy of something with a physical 4K copy of something. And, you know, that's not ideal. So
somebody will crack it in the end, won't they?
Well, they've cracked all the other security they've put onto discs, haven't they, in the past? So
I can, you know, I don't like the fact that they're reticent, but I can understand why they're reticent. And yeah, I mean, the other thing is that, I mean, I know from the perspective of where you are in, you know, Dungy on the Wold or wherever it is, you know, you've got your miserable broadband connection, and it seems very unlikely that anything.
Can I just say for the record that according to BT, I may have Finfinity by the end of the year, so it might not always be the case.
Yeah, the other thing is that in the meantime, if you're looking, it requires you to sort of look big picture on technology, but the ability to increase the 4G bandwidth in Europe, I mean, America's got different problems all of its own, but in Europe, 4G bandwidth does you're looking at solutions for rural areas that are not reliant on people finally digging a big fiber pipe to some hamlet. We're not going to have to wait to a point where that is going to happen for people to get very high speed internet. The phone suppliers are, you know, they are gunning for that market.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to close the gap. And then you've got, you know, in slightly unnerving terms, you've got Chinese companies, satellite companies trying to make satellite over IP cost effective as well. I mean, obviously that you get different benefits and, you know, detriments to satellite IP via satellite. I mean, you get blistering upload speed, but you comparatively not amazingly fast download speed, but it's extremely stable. But I think people aren't just going to be hanging around waiting for fiber optic. There are other options which are not quite so dependent on so much infrastructure. And I think that will close the gap. And, you know, obviously we're worried at the moment, but I don't think this is a long-term impediment to 4K being without a physical format.
No, I agree. I mean, and also things like 4G, I know that Phil experienced how fast they can be when he was in Korea last year, and he was incredibly impressed by the lightning download speeds he could get from a 4G phone. There will be alternatives. And, you know, both Samsung and Sony are going to have a kind of download service available where you download 4K movies and install them on a hard drive. Obviously, the file sizes are going to be big, though, 50, 100 gigabytes. You know, that's going to fill up even a terabyte hard drive pretty quickly. I like having a disc. It's something that I enjoy opening the plastic and sniffing it and, you know, and collecting them. Even though quite often I'll buy a disc, I think we talked about this before, I'll buy a disc and won't listen to it for years, but rather watch it for years. But, you know, I guess, you know, we've gone through Laserdisc, DVD, HD, DVD, Blu-ray. It'd be sad to see the end of physical disc format.
You see, the thing is, with very, very, very few exceptions, DVD and Blu-ray packaging has never... I've had no sentimentality towards it. It doesn't have...
That's because you're an old-school LP kind of guy, aren't you? Big game.
Well, yeah, okay. I still have contact with physical media, which is beautiful. People make huge... I mean, I bought a Ninja Tune an album on the Ninjatune label over Christmas. And don't get me wrong, I spent about 30 quid on it. And it's beautiful. It's massive gatefold. It's got a big colour photo booklet. It's a thing of beauty, quite separate from the fact it has two crackingly recorded records in it. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And I don't remember the last time that I messed about with any film packaging which left me feeling that way. I'm not the same as you. I never really bothered with LaserDisc. I have a LaserDisc player, but it was more out of comedy value than anything else. I don't necessarily have a problem with the death of physical media for film.
What about Simon? What about you? How do you feel about the death of possible? Let me just refresh that. Death of Blu-ray.
Just slip in a few possibles and allegedlys in there, please. It would be a very, very sad day. I don't stream anything at the moment, and to be forced to do that if I want to go to the next generation television would be a very sad day indeed.
Music? I mean, downloading that? No, so
I don't even do that.
Buy CDs, buy Blu-rays, DVDs, you're all.
Well, not DVDs. I can't remember last time.
I can't remember last time I bought a DVD.
Although I do buy the Doctor Who DVDs, so I suppose I could count those. But anything other than Blu-ray, I just don't bother with it.
Now, why do you buy it on DVD and not Blu-ray?
Because they're not available on Blu-ray.
The old
classic. Yeah.
Not the current stuff, right?
No, not the current stuff.
Fair enough. Ed, you're an LP man, Ed, but you still download music, don't you? You're quite happy to download.
For another publication, I've done a sort of study over the year.
Total whore, you.
But I'm not buying a single CD this year. The whole idea is to see just how much music I can get via download, and if in doubt, fill in the gaps and see if it's available on vinyl. And thus far, admittedly, I haven't been buying as much music as I might like. I have to buy baby clothes these days, and they're really expensive.
There has been a noticeable dip in album sales, I think, in the last 3 months.
But more the point, I've not had any shortfall from CD. Thanks to Cobuzz and other lossless download sites, I'm doing all right for music on download. And yeah, vinyl's filling in the gaps. The only thing that I'm desperate to find a lossless copy of, this is, you know, if anyone is listening and knows the answer to this, the Game of Thrones trailers that were running for season 4 on Sky featured a cover of Led Zeppelin's Immigrant Song by a man called Jamie N. Commons, I think. And it's fantastic. And it's on Spotify now, but Spotify's lossy. If anyone can find me, and I'm stressing legally, preferably, a way of getting a lossless copy of that song because it's blinding, I'll be in like Flynn. I want one of those. It's fantastic.
Okay, well, if any listeners know, please, please tell Ed on the feedback thread. Mark B, how about going to download for games? I guess you're up for that, aren't you?
As with most things, it depends on pricing. It depends on whether something's going to end up becoming obsolete. You know, the beauty of a physical format is that you're kind of not tied towards when someone decides just to stop supporting something. I think that was the kind of great worry in a lot of people's minds with regards to things like when the Xbox One was talking about going download only, because it's simply a case of, well, yeah, that's fine, but in 30 years' time, you know, is everything supported? Is it, you know, when, should we say, servers are shut down and the like, does everything kind of filter away into the ether? Whereas, you know, if you've got your old, you know, N64 or something, that's with you kind of wherever you go. You know, that's not going anywhere. I think it all depends on kind of pricing and that kind of thing. But I tend to have to be kind of dragged towards giving up physical formats. You know, I was one of those people who kind of bought a Kindle, but then I can't get out of the habit of buying books. You know, there's something there, something kind of tactile. And I do think, you know, even though, shall we say, you know, as Ed says, DVD packaging and the like, you know, it's never really kind of taken on the same kind of nostalgic love that, you know, a lot of people have, you know, like vinyl covers and the like. There are some
Mark, old computer game boxes.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Some Amiga computer game boxes in particular, and C64 to a lesser extent as well, they were minor works of art in themselves. And I have sentimentality towards those that I don't have on being receiving what is a DVD box of Modern Warfare 97 or whatever we're up to now. That just doesn't have the same appeal.
But I think it's also the fact that you know that you get a plastic box and you just know that it's replaceable. You've just basically got a little printed inlay. Yeah. Whereas, I think I've mentioned this before, the old Super Return of the Jedi SNES cartridge, and I've got the box, and it's sitting in a plastic bag that's sealed underneath my bed, and that never comes out. Maybe like a couple of times a year, I take it out and I just think,
and what do
that's
you do
brilliant.
You sniff it when you take it's out.
No, but it was designed. Everything, the artwork, it kind of wrapped around it. It felt like, I don't know whether it's just the fact that it's kind of cardboard and it feels like it's something more delicate, and it's not just something that's kind of been pressed by this giant machine. It just, you know, it feels like something. And there are occasionally CDs that have kind of fallen in the same kind of category. There are some nice.
Oh yeah, some CDs did manage to do it. I mean, one of the best charity shop find of my life. A very rare Uncle 3-disc mix, Do Androids Dream of Electric Beats? The first 100 of them are signed by James Lavelle. And you open up the gatefold and it's like, hope you like it, Jay. And I found that in a charity shop for £4, which was, I was quite chuffed with that.
I think we all agree that we're moving into a download and streaming future. And in a way, it's quite sad because, yeah, you're right. We're going to lose that physical connection to some of the things that we love. And, you know, you don't really – do you really own a download? Because, you know, I can't give it to you. I can't bequeath it in a will. You know, it's not the same as having something that you treasure and own.
Maybe you're thinking about this perhaps from a DRM-centric perspective, but any purchase I've made of lossless audio, it exists – it can be duplicated, backed up, to me, it's as flexible as any piece of physical media was.
Yeah, okay.
When you did your first, when you did that test of that name DAC, I sent you, and I hope you deleted it afterwards. But I sent you some high res music, which I have full ownership of. And in many ways, it's easier to send it to you than the disc ever was. Just stuck damn thing on Dropbox.
No, what I meant, though, Ed, is that, you know, when your son, say, comes of age, it's not like you can, obviously, in your case, you could bequeath him a massive LP collection, but, you know, a lot of that
here
stuff
is granddad's hard drive.
Yeah,
treasure
quite.
It.
It hasn't got the
what?
Same thing
it's
to it.
It's XP.
And a hard drive that probably the acid plate won't work anymore. Yeah, can't access. It's probably broken. It's gone forever.
Oh, look, there are obvious... We've had this whole how do you archive this digital age, but I'm sorry, ultimately, whilst ironically vinyl, when stored correctly, is almost immortal, provided you don't play it because then it starts to wear out. CDs, DVDs, and Blu-rays are emphatically not immortal. They have a shelf life, and they have always had a shelf life. Early CDs suffer from production problems, which cause issues. Modern CDs are built down to a price. I don't think you would buy any CD, DVD, or Blu-ray now, and it still put even if you had the mechanics to play it in 20 years' time. I don't necessarily think that they will.
I've got a copy of Brothers in Arms that's 30 years old.
Yes,
still fine.
But unfortunately,
it's Brothers in Arms.
Well, yes, nothing's perfect. But actually, if you look at some of the information going into the making of modern CDs, the actual silver layer in them isn't as robust because they're built down to a price. And Blu-ray, the very nature of Blu-ray storage, with it so close to the surface of the disc, I wouldn't have any faith in its ability to work as an archive device.
True.
You know. That's the cold hard truth of it. I mean, effectively, the best you could hope for as a long term sort of story, you'd have to try and think about making a solid state drive out of, I don't know. You'd have to have a good hunt around the periodic table to find something which is conductive but incredibly stable in terms of, you know, decompositions. I mean, whether you could start using gold in trace amounts in an SSD. To make it just work indefinitely, I don't know. I imagine that would wind up being slightly pricey. Although there are probably people in the audiophile community that would be on like on that like a tramp.
You're like pigeons on a chip. Right, let's bid adieu to the physical medium then, and we'll move on to the arch streamer himself, Hodge.
Hello.
You've been streaming like mad for as long as I've known you.
that's not a euphemism, people.
Just to close out that discussion, I do still buy Blu-rays, but it's reduced dramatically since.
Only to use for review purposes, mainly.
Pretty much, yeah. To be honest, but yeah, there are certain things that I think. Well, I actually do want to see the very best version of that, but mostly convenience wins out for me. So I'm pretty much ambivalent about the demise of a physical medium. Yeah, so we're moving on to Netflix.
I was going to say, a podcast, we didn't talk about 4K and we didn't plug Netflix at some point, and we've already mentioned it once, but let's go through this story of yours then, Mark.
Yeah, it's just a quickie. The Netflix released their latest quarterly earnings. Predictably, they're doing very, very well. They're up to, nearly 50 million worldwide subscribers to the streaming service. Everything's looking rosy, more original content promised. And they just dropped a little letter, a little note into the letter to the shareholders saying that they will this year be increasing the price for new subscribers by a dollar or two, depending on where you're based. They already stuck the price of subscription in the Republic of Ireland up to €7.99 the back end of last year. So I think we can safely guess that we'll get a pound a year on top of the subscription here. So we asked the forum members the question, where would you draw the line for your Netflix streaming subscription?
You asked the question and I answered a tenner.
Yeah, and I was factoring in, we both use a DNS service, don't we, to get at the international catalogues.
Yes.
So I factored that in, and that's about £2.50 a month, something like that, with the exchange rate. So I would say, anything over £8 a month, I'd probably start questioning it with my other services and start to probably look at it on a month-by-month basis rather than just blanket keep it for a year. I'll say that. I probably would never get around to...
I think a lot of forum members were saying, I think it's crap for movies or something like that. I totally agree. I don't think it's a great source of up-to-date movies, and that's not why I have it. But I think as a source of TV programs, TV series, whole seasons and everything, plus some really excellent content that they make themselves, it's top draw. I think the fact that you can access Netflix from all over the world is a real bonus because there's different stuff on different locations. I mean, you're currently watching Fargo via the Netherlands.
Just to avoid the advert
breaks.
Yeah.
That's good. I think the fact that, from my experience at least, and given that I don't have a particularly good internet connection, maybe 3 to 5 megabytes at best.
You've never mentioned that.
Yeah, I've never mentioned that, have I? But Netflix looks great. And I've never had a problem with buffering or anything like that. I've had more problems with things like Amazon Prime than I have with I've never had a problem with Netflix, basically. Looks really good. It's been reliable. It's got plenty of quality content as far as I'm concerned. And I think it's well worth $5.99 a month. And up to a tenner, I think I'd still be happy to pay that. I mean, as compared to, say, Amazon Prime, where you're going to have to stump up the mount at the in one lump sum. Was it 70 quid now, is it, for new people? That's a hefty old chunk of cash.
If you
just wanted Amazon Prime for deliveries, that's really bloody annoying. I've got it free for a year, so I'm happy to give it a try. And I'm going to watch the Vikings on your recommendation, Mark, and I am going to watch Black Sails on your recommendation as well. But I'm going to eat my words right now. I picked up a Now TV box, Mark. I know you were going to post me one, but it's $9.99, so I just thought, well, I'll save you the postage. True. It's so cheap. I set it up at the weekend, and it's awesome.
You like it?
$4.99 a month. It's such...
So the service, yeah.
Well, the service is excellent. The picture quality is good, though. I have no problems again. I was watching Game of Thrones. I was rewatching some stuff because it's 720p now with the box. And I thought the picture quality was excellent. Really, really liked it. I've got to eat my words a bit as far as my criticism of Sky goes.
Well, I think when you were criticising Now TV when it launched because they didn't have the entertainment package then, it was...
That was very true.
$8.99 for movies, and the sports pass is still phenomenally expensive as well.
No, you're absolutely right. The entertainment package for $4.99 a month is stellar value in my opinion.
Yeah, it is at the moment. There's so much good stuff on, so I'm using that.
They will obviously jack that price up at some point, won't they? But,
yeah, I think it's odds on going up to $7.99 any time.
Still, that's still pretty good value, actually, for what you get, I think. I'd still keep it.
Sorry. It's interesting because it faces My answer has changed a bit since Sky sent me that free widget for the box, the on-demand adapter.
Yeah.
And their on-demand services are pretty good, and they do add a dimension to their portfolio, which they didn't have previously. But I don't know. The thing about Netflix, over and above the on-demand services of Sky, is that the Netflix iOS implementation, the iPad and iPhone, is just bomb-proof good. And the particular time of life, as I find myself at the moment, where I'm upstairs waiting for the boy to go to sleep, and so on and so forth.
Well, rock and roll life you lead now.
Well, it's just wild. But it just works superbly. And I will pay for the convenience of just how well it works as a means for me to just watch something whilst he's, you know, thrashing around and making funny noises. That sounds terrible, doesn't it? When I'm waiting for him to go to sleep. And yeah, there's a value added beyond simply the content of Netflix for me. Unlike Steve, my broadband line's pretty good. So, you know, my wife can be watching something downstairs via the inbuilt Netflix app on the Panasonic, and I can be upstairs watching something completely different, and it just works. It's stable. Neither of us see any nastiness. And, you know, I hate you, Hodgkinson, because you sent me a message going, oh, yeah, all of Person of Interest Season 2 has just appeared. Yeah. And obviously I've got lots and lots of AV Forums reviewing to do between now and the end of the month. I'm most of the way there, but there's one last one to go.
One to go, Ed.
I've just had to leave it and go nowhere near it. But yeah, I will be binge watching that with a vengeance as soon as I can. So,
Mark B, are you a happy streamer?
I'm a recent convert, but I like it simply because I like to know that there's an end to a series before I begin. I've got to admit, too many series I've been kind of burnt with, so you know, I kind of
that feeling.
Yeah, you know, you get through kind of 18 hours of TV and you suddenly read something, oh, it's been cancelled, no season two. You just think, oh, no, I'll just, anything goes on either, you know, I record it off TV or I'll stream it once I know that everything's there, then I'll start watching it.
Okay, excellent. And Simon, the last holdout, is this tempting you to start streaming?
I do have one question, probably towards Hodge, actually. You've got a TiVo box, yeah?
Yeah.
Do you use the Netflix channel on the TiVo box?
I thought, yes, I do sometimes. I hadn't realised I had it. It was Netflix that told me that there was a season two of Person of Interest, which really creeped me out because I thought I'd never used it on there. I thought, how does it know I want to know that? I do. It works really well. Yeah.
The join-up on Netflix is terrifying. That you'll watch something on one of the devices and it just all...
Yeah,
All seegs back. And it'll pick up where you left off, and it's a little unnerving, especially if you are watching Person of Interest, a program
predicated
around the idea of surveillance. Oh,
the irony!
Yeah, that was it. That was the irony at play there. But yes, I use it, and it does work really well, Simon. Actually, because the TiVo has its own dedicated internet connection with from Virgin, and you'll never get buffering issues through it.
Yeah, exactly. See, what I mean, quite apart from the annoying thing of just downloading and streaming, I didn't really want to have another box or something else just to have to watch to stream. You know, I just didn't want to have any another box. But now I've already got a box that will do it for me.
Aren't they offering 6 months free?
They are.
I don't know if that's just new customers. It's probably just new customers. But it's worth trying to wangle it out of them, maybe.
Yeah. Give yourself to the dark side, Mr.
Yeah, go on. I mean, I understand why you're resisting, Simon, but I was like you at one point, but give in to it, boy. It's society's crime, not ours.
I mean, the other thing is that if you are someone with a distaste for Rupert Murdoch, and I stress I'm not one of these people, I don't care. When everyone else was laughing at him for doing for being invested in Sky in the first place, he turned it round and is now scaring the shit out of people that were being entirely derogatory 15 years ago. But nonetheless, Netflix is the biggest single competitor to these models because they turned using, by the appliance of new technology, they turned an asset which was otherwise valueless into the platform for them to go out and challenge the established order. And they represent the biggest shake-up to broadcast television ever. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, come and join the revolution.
Really. So they're the Rebel Alliance.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, no, there's evil no say. They have all the portents of becoming just as evil as the people there, as the people that they're doing. But ultimately, yeah, it goes back to, you know, my fixation with the film BMX Bandits and all that other chud from the 1980s. On individually, these things are worthless. Even if you're Sky and you've got umpty movies channels, there's no capital in scheduling them into a broadcast. But when you turn it into an on-demand model, when BMX Bandits and 150 other terrible films are available for drunk people to watch at a moment's notice, all of a sudden you've got a medium where people go, do you know what? £6 a month for me to watch shite on demand. Go for it. And then before you know it, you have a global platform to which you can start the challenge. And it's, you know, to me, I think that I find it fascinating. Obviously, we've discussed in the past that there's a fragmentation of the on-demand platforms, and a wider question that it bolted onto how much you'll pay for Netflix is how much your budget in total to get all the on-demand stuff that you want. I mean, I have to admit, I realize quite soberingly, I hand Sky a whisker under £90 a month. At the moment. So £6 for Netflix is neither here nor there, really.
It's a bargain, isn't it?
So, yeah, it's a balancing act. But nonetheless, what Netflix has done is deeply impressive. And they represent the biggest challenge to the established order of broadcasting going. So, yeah, come join us. What's the worst that could happen?
Okay, excellent. Thank you for that, Ed. We've discovered that he'd pay up to £90, basically. Last podcast, we asked for any members, forum members wanted to ask us any AV questions, AV related questions, and we've got a cracking question actually from one member who asked us, and I'm going to start with Simon.
Hello.
What would be your dream setup? If money was no object, what AV kit would you buy?
Okay. I have actually thought about this rather than just get it sprung upon me.
Good, you mean you read the running order?
I read.
Wow. Someone does.
What a good question. If money, okay, I've got two answers to it, really. If money was no object, I would have to have my own dedicated room, and I would have one of the Oro 3D setups. Yeah. But the second answer would be, if it was to be a multifunctional room, which most of us live in, and I live in now, of course, would be something along the lines of what Stu done to his house. His setup, because I thought that was a pretty awesome setup. So, money no object, I think I would go with the Oro 3D kind of setup. Makes and models and everything.
So, have you got any particular preference in terms of projection? Or
not really, no, because when you're talking about the very high end, there's not really much in it, is there? So,
a couple of hundred grand in it, actually. But
Well, yeah, but I mean, no, in the quality of the image that you see. Yeah, and you're saying money's no object. So I don't think I would want to list out names of
I think, actually, I'll probably rephrase the question, I guess, because you could say, well, I'd buy a Christie projector for 150 or 200,000 quickly. That's a bit ridiculous because almost no one can afford that. And it's really a professional projector anyway, cinema projector. I suppose what we should do is limit it to realistic products. So, you know, for example, if I was going to buy a projector right now, I think I'd probably get the VW 1100, the Sony, because it's a native 4K projector. It's a cracking projector. It's got a beautiful bit of glass in it. You know, it's got a pin sharp image. When I did the review of the VW 1000, it was a stunning projector. I'm really impressed by it in terms of 2D and 3D. So I'd probably go for that as a realistic, you know, rather than saying, oh, I could spend, I mean, you could go for 30 grand on a Sim 2, but it's... It's a 1080p DLP. I would definitely personally go for the cheaper 17,000 Sony because I think it's got
a bargain. Thing.
Yeah. Well, no, but I think 17,000.
No, you make a valid point.
What you're getting is effectively a cinema projector in a consumer package. That's actually a technological achievement in itself, and B, actually quite good value. Pretty when you compare it to the Sim 2, for example, which is nearly twice as much. So that would be my choice as a projector. I would go for something that's a, you know, you could, people could afford to buy, you know, but obviously you'd need a fair bit of cash. I'm not saying get a £200,000 Barco or something like that. So perhaps we should rephrase the question is, what cinema kit would you buy? What AV kit would you buy? If money wasn't an issue, but you weren't going to go ridiculous to ridiculous.
Yeah, you weren't going to go mad. Yeah, because I think that the, well, I'm pretty sure it's been said before, that the best money you can spend is on the room itself. And then you, the kit itself, you can, you know, have reasonably cheap kit and it sound as good as some of the high-end stuff if the room is suitable. So that's why I said I want my own dedicated room, which I would build from the ground up, you know.
And build the house around the room. Start with the room.
Well, kind of. Or just build the room itself, you know, out in the garden or
basement. Wherever. Best thing in the world for home cinema, basement.
Basement, well, yeah.
Get a house with a basement, mate. That's what you want.
How else do you build a room other than from the ground up?
You can put it down.
You dig down. All right, Mr. Botwright. So, what would you go for?
Obviously, I would be focusing more on gaming.
Haven't you already got a console, Sue-Bit?
Yeah. Well, no. See, I'd build an absolute monster, a beast of a gaming PC. Get in Oculus Rift dev kit, omnidirectional treadmill. I'd be fairly happy with that. Probably G27 racing wheel. You know, one of the seat setups with the multiple monitor, you know, so you get kind of panoramic view, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I've driven those in shows and stuff. They're quite good fun.
But I'd stick it in the shell of a Reliant Robin or something like that.
I like that.
Good, I like your thinking.
I'll go with the same projector as you, Steve, I think, based on your comments, really. Some sort of... there was a screen, a projector screen. Was it Genesis Tech that had some sort of lighting technology in, so it was good in lighter rooms? So do you remember that?
Oh, you mean like Black Diamond?
No, it was something a bit more fancy than that. Anyway, it was one of the... It was about £6,000, this screen. One of those, so it would be handy for watching the football without the curtains closed. Behind that screen, I'd have either...
Well, money's no object. You can build it.
You said it was. No, we just said we had to economise.
You'd have the equipment. With the room, you can do what you like, but the equipment...
No, I've scrubbed a few grand off my shopping list since you said that. I would have a 55-inch low OLED behind the screen, or when the screen's not up, or perhaps a ZT60 end of line processor. That's what I meant. Product codes confusing us again.
Yeah,
DataSat LS10 doing the processing. I don't really need an RS20. An Oro 3D setup. I've not got round to the specific speakers, but I would like a at least dual subwoofers, I think. Or preferably quad. Having been exposed to a few multiple subwoofer setups, so it really puts a smile on my face. Some kind of automation system and a Wii U. That's because Mario Kart 8 is coming out soon.
I think you can treat yourself to a Wii U now.
I could do that. Yeah, that's the one I can afford.
All right, and over to... I'm guessing we're going to get some fairly expensive kit from Ed.
Well, you see, the thing is, my dream room would be... Obviously, it would only have two speakers in it rather than five.
Yeah, but they'd be bloody big and bloody expensive, wouldn't they?
Well, you see, it's interesting. You throw a spanner in the works with the sensible equipment. It's the defining difference between me going for a name statement... at a hundred and however many thousand pounds, or you know, going for the poverty option, which is a name 552 preamp and 500 power amp, which is only £34,000. You know, so whether I'd have to slum it or not. Source again. I'm sounding like a stuck record here. Probably the big name streamer with
no pun intended.
555 power supply. Turntable would be from the Avid company in Cambridgeshire, their flagship Acutus Reference. I'd probably go... There's a tone arm by a Japanese company called Dynavector, which looks like a child science project, but sounds amazing, called the 507. I'd go for a Dynavector cartridge on that. The big Avid Phono stage. And speakers, that's a tough one. Name statement, I'd have to go off and listen to. I'd probably have to listen to some stuff by Wilson in the US. When you're dropping six figures on a pair of loudspeakers, you probably do have to have a bit of a listen in your own room and, you know, make some decisions, I think, based on that. If we're doing marginally more sensible, and I say marginally, having listened to them, Neat, based up in Durham, they make a speaker called the XL10, which is literally, if you asked a six-year-old boy to draw what he would think a really expensive pair of loudspeakers would look like, he'd actually draw the Neat XL10. It's got like 15 drivers pointing in all sorts of directions, and it looks like a nightmare, but it sounds utterly sublime. And yes, and then just enough shelves to buy all the records. Not, you know, just as simple as that, really. I mean, AV, the only time, I suppose, recently where I had something which was genuinely surprising was I was listening to a system a couple of months ago in Berlin, which had five channels of power amplification, one three-channel amp and one two-channel amp from a Norwegian company called Elektrokompaniet, which is Norwegian for electro company. And that was partnered with the Marantz processor. And that sounded jaw-droppingly good. That was, by the standards of what I've just been talking about, that was almost sensibly priced. You could probably have it for $10,000. And that's fine. And then I'd probably talk to Messrs. Hodgkinson and Withers to find me a screen that was, you know, up to what they thought I needed, given I'm quite blind and I don't pay that much attention to picture. Can you actually buy a 4K OLED in the UK at the moment?
No.
Well, I'll just have to wait. I have to get a ZT65 until such time as I can sort one of those out. Projectors and the like doesn't, in the same way that most people can't be bothered with vinyl, I can't be bothered with having an 8-foot screen. Doesn't do anything for me.
I would have at least one, more than an 8-foot screen. I'd have
a massive
screen, scope ratio with side masking, VW1100, as I said, definitely DataSat, pre-pro and power amp combo, the full Auro 11.2 setup. And I guess probably, I mean, in terms of source, an Oppo Blu-ray player will be fine. And you know what the really cruel irony of all that is? I had most of that kit in my room at some point over the last couple of years.
Well,
And saying goodbye to it was bittersweet. Okay, great. That's it for our dream AV kit within a realistic budget. Recent new reviews that have gone up. Ed, you've just covered the DALI 5.1 speaker pack, which has literally just gone up. I did it before this podcast, proofed it before this podcast. And you were impressed.
Yes, I have to say, the category that this speaker package falls into, I'm a huge fan of, where you basically you're dealing with small, inexpensive stand mount speakers from normally a company's inexpensive product lineup and partnered with a respectable sub. You've got something which is not much bigger than a standard sub SAT package, but it just offers so much more. As far as I'm concerned, it just sounds, because the crossover is running that little bit lower, it just sounds more refined. It sounds bigger. It's the whole concept is where, you know, as far as I'm concerned, people spending roughly sensible money should be looking. And the DALI is a fantastic example of the breed. It's an interesting one. The satellites are pretty good. The little vocal center and Zensor 1 speakers. They've got the DALI wood fiber driver. They're nicely assembled. They're not great. Not much to look at. I've got to be honest. One of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. But it all sounds lovely. The big surprise, I shouldn't say surprise. I mean, I have seen it before. But the star of the show is the subwoofer. The E9F might not be the most romantically named device I've ever come across. But no, it's really, really, really good. If you are looking for a sensibly priced compact subwoofer, you need to seek one of those out. It's very clever indeed. But it just furthers my belief in this. I did a QAcoustics 2000 package that was a similar sort of size and shape, and I've looked at the Acoustic Energy Neo 6.1 in the past as well. And that you're talking about something which is the same price as the Kef Eggs and QAcoustics 7000.1 and Cabas Eol and things like that, and they just do music and non-action films so much better than subsat packages, and they're not much harder to fit in. So yeah, if you're looking for it, seek one out.
You gave it a Best Buy badge, I believe.
I did. It's £1,079, which is a peculiar sum of money. But I the Q Acoustics package is a little bit less. I don't think it's as refined, although it is bloody good. I think for £1,000, I can't think of another speaker package I'd choose over the Dali, which is why I handed it a Best Buy.
Excellent. So, great.
Yeah, and then obviously I've done other reviews as well, because I do all my reviews in a big lump.
yeah, on about 2 days. Okay, I think that'll do for hardware. Basically, this week we've had a fairly hefty amount of AV talk so far. Very unusual. Wow. We haven't gone off topic once. This is all going to go horribly wrong, I think, quite soon. Mr. Botwright.
Yep.
Xbox One, Japanese release date?
Yes. Finally, we've got Japanese release date for the Xbox One. Microsoft have confirmed it, 4th September. Obviously, PS4 launched there back in February, so they're basically giving them 6 months head start. Decent amount of games coming with it, obviously, with there's Dead Rising 3, Forza 5, Sunset Overdrive, Rise, and third-party titles, Call of Duty Ghosts and Tomb Raider Definitive Edition, Thief, and the yet-to-be-released Murdered Soul Suspect. You know, there's not really a great deal to be said. You know, they're releasing it in a territory that is definitely not, should we say, a prime concern. Yeah. Well, that's
no one's
going
to buy it, are they?
No. You know, they've supposedly got this big Japanese studio. I think they said it was renowned studio working on an exclusive. No word, I don't think, on price yet. But yeah, really, it's just a case of, you know, saving face. You've got to release it there. If you're releasing a games console, you have to release it in Japan. Otherwise, it just looks kind of strangely defeatist. But, you know, you wouldn't expect it to be, you know, outselling the PS4. And also consider, I suppose, in a sense, it's not that bad for Microsoft, simply because the console market in Japan is dwindling and is kind of coming secondary to the handheld market. And given the fact that the PS4 is going to be kind of linking up with the Vita more, you know, it just practically on every front, it just seems hard to sell the Xbox One there.
Earlier, you were talking about classic games. Now, I think this is not a classic game, if not possibly one of the worst games of all time, but there is some news about the E.T. landfill.
Yes. The tale that some, kind of myself included, thought might be entirely apocryphal. This documentary that Microsoft are going to be releasing for, you know, the gold content, looking into the story that basically back in 1982, the Atari 2600 game tie into the E.T. film was so bad, and many said it contributed to the video game crash of 83, that basically under cover of darkness, they had to bury it in a New Mexico landfill and encase it in concrete so that no one could ever get to it.
Or worse than that, it could ever escape, presumably.
Yeah, well, it does sound like they kind of chose to stick a stake through its heart and douse it in holy water or something. But yeah, Microsoft have also kind of, they've released the footage, actually, an excerpt from the upcoming documentary. It's a little bit odd because it's not actually, you'd expect some kind of a teaser trailer or something like that, kind of hedging around the big shot, but they actually show, you know, the moment that they pull out the first cartridge to the crowd, kind of basically giving away the money shot. So quite, who's going to sit through the long documentary about it who wasn't otherwise interested in you know, the history of the making of the game? I don't know, but it's, yep, they've shown that it wasn't just E.T. as well. There were other cartridges that Atari chose to kind of stick in the earth. And so, yep, it's a little bit of gaming history there.
And as I understand it, spoilers, I have to express some disappointment here, Mr. Spot, right? You said that you're not up for buying a cartridge to put with your Star Wars one under your bed.
No, no. I've got too much gaming, what I would call memorabilia, but other people tend to call crap, littering places. I've at some point, I'm going to have to get rid of the Master Chief helmet and the Resident Evil 4 controller that's like a chainsaw. But I just don't want to.
How big is this helmet? Life size.
No. It's not really life size, but it's big. It's probably about kind of, you know, 9 inches across, probably. You lift it up and then you can put the game in underneath, and it's.
Oh, that one.
I like it. I put hats on it, you know.
and anyone, this is just as well the podcast can't be started at a random point, because Botwright talking about his 9-inch helmet that he puts helmet with hats on.
out of context, that would sound very strange indeed. On that delightful note, that's it for games news. Next up, movie news. And cue the music, because it's Mark's AV Snack. What have you got for us this week, Mark?
Not much.
As well prepared as always, then.
We're running behind here. You asked me about popcorn.
Make it quick.
This is going to be really, really quick and extremely easy. So easy that even Botwright could do it. So, popcorn nachos. How can't get more movie themed than that, can you? Well, I'm sure you can, but can't think of anything. So butter, melted butter, some very finely diced red pepper, a bit of finely diced chili, a pinch of cumin, pinch of coriander, some paprika, salt, pepper. Basically mix that all up within the butter. Stick the popcorn in, fold it through. Sprinkle some grated cheese of your choice on top, whack it under the grill, a very hot grill, for about 30 seconds, and eat. That's it. Just buy it in a pack if you can't be bothered making it. But yes, it's very good. It's a 2-minute recipe, ideal for sharing during a movie. At least that's my excuse.
And why popcorn and not corn chips?
Because Steve asked me, because Steve has bought a popcorn maker, and he says he goes off to, when I took do my recipe, he just f***s off and makes a cup of tea and ignores the whole feature. In fact, he wanted to drop it, if I remember rightly, at the morning meeting today. So I'm trying to please. Yes, you did.
I said, we've got a lot on this episode.
Yeah. So this is out for Steve, just to keep Steve happy, so he doesn't want to drop it for the next one. But of course, yes, you could just use standard.
Yeah, would have really helped you. I hadn't actually been listening to what you were saying, so I didn't realise you were doing a recipe for me.
You have to listen to it, don't you, on the edit for timing, so you can
listen to it then. Actually try it out. Jazz up a bit of popcorn, that's great.
Jazz up a bit of popcorn, and it's very quick and easy to do.
Okay, excellent. Thank you, Mark. Would someone like to ask the inevitable question, please?
Steve, what's at the cinema?
I'm going to do the... It could not sound less enthusiastic than the question if you tried. It's like, oh God, here we go again. The Amazing Spider-Man 2, which actually opened over Easter, but obviously we had our break last week. I can do the short review if you like, which is too much plot, too many characters, too many villains. It's like they haven't learned anything from Spider-Man 3, which was universally lambasted for having way too many villains in it. And now, only a few years later, they're making the Amazing Spider-Man 2, and they've lobbed in three villains. They've got Electro, Green Goblin, and also Rhino. Which is a shame, because actually it's not a bad movie. There's quite a lot of it is really good. Where it really is good is in the interactions between the characters, particularly between Peter Parker, played by Andrew Garfield, and Gwen Stacy, played by Emma Stone. Now, they are a couple in real life, but they have genuine on-screen chemistry, and their scenes are really sweet. So when it's that kind of stuff, you're really enjoying it. When it starts getting into all the action scenes, which just go on interminably, you're full of CG and explosions, it gets a bit boring. And given that the villains themselves, particularly Electro, seem a bit... They don't seem to have much of a plan. You know, they're kind of just, they're almost directionless in terms of the way that they're going to, you don't really know what their beef is half the time. They kind of just are in a bad mood. One of the villains, Rhino, doesn't even appear till like the last few seconds of the film. And you just get this impression that the whole film, they were trying to stick everything, including the kitchen sink, into this movie. And there was just too much, and they should have spread it out more over two films. I mean, there is a third film coming in 2 years' time, and you know, you get the feeling they could have just waited with Rhino for a couple of years. You didn't need to see him at all in this film, because you literally see him for a few minutes at the end. But there are great elements in it. There's some big plot twists, things I'm not going to mention because I don't want to spoil if people haven't seen it. Mark Webb directs it very well. I don't know if he was chosen as director for these films because his surname is Webb, or it's just a coincidence. But he's done a good job. What was really funny, though, is in the end credits, there's a trailer for or a sequence from the new Fox movie, X-Men Days of Futures Past. And you thought, what's weird? Is that some sort of tie-up deal between Sony and Fox, you know, because they're both Marvel products? No, apparently Mark Webb had a two-picture contract with Fox. He'd done one movie, 5 Days of Summer, hadn't done the second movie because he'd been making Spider-Man films. So to get out of the contract, he and Sony agreed to let Fox put a trailer for their film during the end credits of Spider-Man, which is very weird because it's got nothing to do, other than the fact they're both Marvel properties, it's got nothing to do with the Spider-Man movie at all. It's like very disconcerting when it happens. But otherwise, it's an okay movie that could have been a lot better if they just had the courage to not try and cram so much in. Which is it's a shame because I think there is some interesting elements to it, but like most modern filmmaking now, they don't seem to trust the audience to A, have any patience, or B, have any intelligence sometimes.
That's a real shame.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't. And I haven't been to see it because I was rather disappointed with the first one and the whole making of it again. But having said that, this one does intrigue me, both what you've said there and reading Kaz's review on site. I don't think it's got me enough to go and see it at the cinema, but I will probably get it on Blu-ray, on my nice Blu-ray. Yeah. It's a real shame because I think they've kind of, listening to you then, they seem to have got the character of Peter Parker almost as good as he is in the comics.
Yeah, definitely. Which is, and Andrew Garfield,
which is something
very good
that they've
role.
Struggled. Yeah, they struggled with that throughout the past four films. Tobey Maguire wasn't particularly good, although he was a bit too whiny. And in the first one, what's the guy's name? Andrew Garfield. In the first one, he was okay. It wasn't quite there. There were elements, but it wasn't quite the Peter Parker he should have been. Spider-Man was great, but Peter Parker wasn't. Here, it sounds like they've got it just about right. So that is interesting, but as opposed to throwing everything at the screen, do you think they're kind of they've looked at the Avengers and they've looked at Captain America and they've gone, oh, hang on, we need to up our game here. Let's put everything in.
That's kind of what's happening, because if you look at Spider-Man or X-Men, because you know you've got X-Men Days of Futures Past, which includes all the cast from the X-Men First Class, all the original cast and the previous X-Men movies, all lumped together. It's like they've seen what Marvel done with the Avengers, and now they're thinking, oh, well, we need to try and replicate that in some way. Now you've got DC Comics and Warner Brothers who are throwing in Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman into the next Superman movie, and then they've already announced they're doing a Justice League movie in 2 years after that, in 2018. So, you know, the problem is that what Marvel did was they took their time. They spent 4 or 5 years getting to the point of the Avengers, building up slowly with separate
five
films.
Or six
they did it really
films.
Well. They had the patience and the faith in their audience to actually do it properly. And everyone else is just trying to run to catch up now. And I think there's going to be some massive bombs out of this at some point. But having said that, Spider-Man 2 is better than the Amazing Spider-Man, because you've got past the whole do we need to reboot it thing, which was just purely done by Sony to keep the rights from going back to Disney/Marvel. So this is a better film in that sense. It's got some great elements to it. It has some interesting subplots, that a lot of which have been cut out, because I've seen stuff in the trailer that's not in the film. So there's definitely subplots that were cut out because the film was running way too long. They also shot sequences with Mary Jane, the character of Mary Jane, played by Shailene Woodley, who was currently in the film Divergent. Again, she was cut out because there were just too many characters as it was, and they'll move that character into the third film. But I just felt like it could have been a really good movie if they just, you know, sometimes less is more, and this is a good example where less would have been more. Simon, Blu-rays released next week, or this week in fact, to be honest. Mandela, Long Walk to Freedom, which Kaz has just reviewed, I think.
Yeah, won lots of Oscars, didn't it?
No, it didn't. No,
was that the other one? That was the other one. Almost the same thing.
American Hustle, was nominated for lots of Oscars, didn't win any.
It's all right.
I enjoyed it. It's very funny. I mean, it's meant to be a comedy.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, the characters are great. It's a bit predictable, and you kind of know where it's going to go. But it's the characters in it are brilliant. You know, everyone is really, really good in it, and it looks good. Doing, I mean, I've seen the disc. It looks and sounds great. So
Anchorman 2
didn't really get on with Anchorman 1.
But, I saw it.
It's got an audience.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's got an audience. A lot of people like it.
It was funny. It's like one of those things where they throw loads of jokes at the screen and some of them stick and some of them don't. Yeah. But more stick than don't, I'd say, in terms of the joke ratio. The disc itself includes both the theatrical cut and the extended cut with 794 more jokes, apparently. And quite a lot of excellent... I proofed Kaz's review, so I could see all the extras, and they did like it. It's got a great selection of extras, lots of gag and outtakes and deleted scenes and this sort of stuff. So if you're an Anchorman fan, it's a definite must-buy. All Is Lost is the Robert Redford movie. That review should be coming up by the time this podcast goes up, and it's the one where he's just on his own in a boat, a yacht.
On his own on a boat, yeah.
Yeah. But it looks like an interesting movie, and apparently he gives a great performance in it. I have not seen it, I must say. And the other film that comes out this week is Nymphomaniac, Volumes 1 and 2, by Lars von Trier, which my copy arrived today. I was just curious, okay? Because basically, a big name cast, and what they've done is there are scenes of actual sex in it, but they've used porn actors and then sort of merged the faces of the actors with the... I don't know, apparently. Haven't seen it yet, but... it caught my interest. Yeah, they had me at the scenes of explicit sex. So anyway, I've arrived today, so I will check it out at some point. And I think that's it for this week. My thanks to Mark Hodgkinson.
You're out of your box. I wasn't ready for that. It's a very abrupt end, that, Steve. Christ.
Well, if you look at the running order, you'll see that's all we've got to talk about.
I know, but it doesn't normally end like so punctually.
Well, yeah, we normally dither for a bit, but yeah, I normally, don't you?
Yeah, I normally have to go before we end. Okay, hang on, how about this? that wasn't it.
Hang on.
I'll just quick read. Oh,
shut up, Mark. Are you ready?
Bye.
I'll lead into you again. Okay. That's it for the AV4's podcast this week. My thanks to...
Well, you haven't said my name.
Oh, yeah.
Could have been anyone.
My thanks. No, I'll do that a third time, shall I? Third time's a charm. That's it for the AV4ums podcast this week. My thanks to Mark Hodgkinson.
I may not be a smart dog, but I know what roadkill is.
Mark Buttright.
Not today, Zerg.
Simon Crust.
You heard of Kung Fu? We'll get ready for pork chop.
And Ed Selly.
Am I really that fat?
You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook, bookmarkavforums.com for the latest reviews, news, and videos. Plus, why not leave us a rating on iTunes if you enjoyed the show? I'm Steve Withers. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.